Time right now is 2 minutes past the hour, and you are listening to WSCA LP Portsmouth Community Radio, 106.1 FM. My name's Sean Henderson. The name of the show is Stay Tuned, and I promised you that the great Eric Anderson would join me live in the studio, and I did not lie, and more importantly, he did not lie. He is here, and he brought his brand new album with him. He has a brand new live album, and still has that new CD smell. I love that. It's called The Cologne Concert. And I'm going to play a cut off of this, and we'll be back with Eric Anderson live in the studio. The name of this song is called Woman, She Was Gentle. And again, it's live, Eric Anderson, right here at WSCA.
Woman, she was gentle. She took me for a while. When my soul was beaten, she held it like a child. Once there was another, she looked so much like you. She never could believe these things that I'm telling you. She was the woman who knew the life I craved. Some would call her a savior, some would call her a slave. Her devotion, it betrayed me, always broke my thoughts. She stabbed me with her silence, and I bled and called it love. I say love. La la la. I was born a sailor with a sailor's lonely life. She said the sea, it frightened her. She could not be the sailor's wife. She said our love was sacred. I agreed that it was blessed. Underneath, we really knew neither one could be possessed. Cannot reach for what you cannot touch. But I will wander through your wounds looking for an honest scar. Teach me how to sing this song now. I will sing it well. I say la 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 la. She was gentle. She took me for a while. When my soul was beaten, she held it like a child. Like a child. La la la, la like a child. La la la, la like a child. La la la.
Very nice. Woman, She Was Gentle. That's live, Eric Anderson. Brand new album from him. Absolutely beautiful. And the name of the new album is called The Cologne Concert. And Eric
is... It'll be released... hello, everyone. This is Eric. It's going to be released in January officially, but they on vinyl. It was made for vinyl. It's a vinyl record company out of Cologne, Germany. And they also make CDs, and they rushed over like a box of boxes of 200 CDs for this tour.
Nice.
So we've almost sold out of them. But
well, I'm glad that I have one in my hot little hands. Let me tell you that right now.
Oh, I'm happy. So. I'm so happy we had one for you. So it will be out officially in January, just so the people know. People who still buy CDs or vinyl.
Vinyl seems to have a resurgence. You know, people are. Yeah, people are sort of getting back into the vinyl.
It's a funny story. There's a whole audience who are buying vinyl, and they want new vinyl. They don't want anything that's been released before, made for vinyl. Reissued as vinyl. They want made for vinyl. And they have all this expensive equipment and turntables, and which can be very... You can pay 10 grand for a turntable. And in Germany, where this album was made, there are people who are so into it that they will buy anything that's new.
Mm-hmm.
There's two points to this story. They'll buy anything that's new just for the sake of buying something that's new made for vinyl.
Really?
They may not come to your shows, even if it was down the street from where they live. They may not come, and they just only want to get their hands on the vinyl. It's some kind of cult status thing. The other thing they do, and this is in Holland, and it's happening in France everywhere, but it's this phenomenon of vinyl for like people that have expensive equipment. The other thing is that a lot of reviewers who will review a vinyl record because it's different, where they won't review a CD because there's such a tsunami of CDs coming out every week and month.
Exactly, yeah.
That they'll ignore them, but they will review vinyl. So you get your foot in the door in terms of reviews just because of that in Europe. I don't know about here, but
so that was basically the plan. I mean, so did someone approach you and say we want to put this out on vinyl for reasons? Or
not exactly that way. Werner Meyer, the owner of this company, and they're distributed by an international distributor called Rough Trade. They're out of Cologne in London, but they operate everywhere. He just said we'd like to do a live. It was first going to be like a couple tracks with my wife and myself, who sings. And
that was on that last track.
She's from Holland, and she's also recording an album of her own now in Italy, but. He just approached for a couple of tracks, and then it morphed into this do an album. Mm-hmm. So we did they set up a concert in a theater in Cologne, and we did this album, and it morphed into a whole event, which turned into a document, which was this record. We got 9 songs on it.
That's fantastic, absolutely. The sound quality of that, just that last song that we were just listening to, it just sounds so kind of rich.
I know, it was
rich,
remarkable,
you know?
Considering it was live. A lot of radio people thought it was a studio record, but it's not. I guess we were just really lucky, because some of the performances, I thought, oh boy, we had trouble with the sound in the hall. We had trouble with that, and that threw us off, but somehow we managed to... come out with some great performances, I think. I hope.
So did the night feel okay as you were recording it? Or?
The people, the audience was great, but there were times where we couldn't hear ourselves on stage. These are things that the audience, of course, is not aware of, but can throw off the chemistry and the balance of the performance. So we were just lucky that it came out, and it's as good as anything I've ever recorded.
Awesome. Well, that's
but the
a
guy
testament
who engineered
to...
it, you know, these German guys, they're really good, and... they can really hear that, you know, they're really into the technical things,
right.
You know.
I wish I had ears like that.
If you ever listen to, like, Pat Metheny Records or Lyle Mays or the people from ECM, Keith Jarrett, those people, if you ever listen to their records, they're so technically so amazing, you know, almost too good. And they also got the advanced copies of us to overnight from Cologne for this tour. It was like... right to the end, and they managed to get it, and we had like a week or so to spare.
Nice. It's nice when things work out like that. Usually it's the tour's over and then your boxes arrive.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's very not American style.
Mm-hmm.
He sent to Holland, where I live. I have a residency there. He sent there some boxes that never arrived. But Carol, my manager, got these things overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure.
Good for Carol. Our hats off to Carol for sure. Time right now is 2:13. We're live in the studio with Eric Anderson. And we were just talking about his brand new live album called The Cologne Concert. And he's going to be performing tonight up in Portland at One Longfellow Square. And first time you've been in Maine for a while. I don't remember the last time you were. When was the last time you were? Well, this is the last time you toured in the States, really, for that matter.
2 years.
Oh, was it that soon? Yeah,
it was weird to get back into it, trying to tour again, because people say it's like riding a bike, but it's not.
No.
It's like, as I tell everybody, it's like turning your skin inside out. It's like I was not into it. I mean, I did capitals, like I've done shows, like one-off shows in Paris or Rome or London.
Uh-huh.
Cologne, we did this concert, but not like a 5-7 week tour.
Right.
So that was a whole, I really had to work myself into shape for this one. But we were here a couple of years ago, I think. But the only thing I really remember about Maine was driving back down towards Boston and New York in the night and stopping off at L.L. Bean at 4:30 in the morning.
Right.
And being the only customers in there looking at canoes and backpacks. And
that's a great thing about beans.
It's like, well, it was like walking into Bloomingdale's or something. I couldn't believe it, how beautiful.
You should try going on on Christmas Eve. You can go on Christmas Eve at like 2 in the morning because they never close the doors. And it's packed, absolutely packed, you know?
I was in Venice, Italy on Christmas Eve and in the square, San Marco Square, the big square with the big churches and everything, the famous square. And it was virtually empty, just me and pieces of fog.
Wow.
Drifting across and a few pigeons that didn't quite get up to their perches. It was remarkable.
So
this place is like Times Square,
mm-hmm.
empty, not one soul. But
it's nice to be. I haven't been
in Portsmouth in a long time. We were here last night. We had a beautiful dinner at this place called, I got to plug this place, called Dinner Horn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a seafood restaurant.
Yeah, right off of Route 1.
Everybody should go there. Yeah. It's the best fish I've had in years. I don't know where they get them from, because are there any fish left anymore? I don't know.
Well, all the fish that are left are right nearby.
The Georges Bank is closed off and everything, I understand.
We're fortunate up here that we're a bit unspoiled. Well, as unspoiled as we can be, I suppose.
Had some haddock and sole, and the bread pudding was outrageous.
Awesome. Well, there you go.
Stuff.
A little shout out to the Dinner Horn. Great.
But I think this is the town where the great Joyce Anderson was living for a while.
Yeah, she actually lives right up the street. Yeah, she lives in York now, which is right up the road.
She was the violinist on my album Beat Avenue.
I did not know that. That is so funny.
She's the violinist. I found her at a gig, and she packed a toothbrush and a change of underwear and came down to New York and recorded the album with me.
And how did you find her? Because it's an interesting
show. She was opening a show for me.
No kidding. The same spelling of your last name, which I always found interesting.
She's like a cousin, but she's Danish. I'm Norwegian. My antecedents were Norwegian. But she is actually coming to sit in with me at the show tonight.
Really?
Awesome. With Harvey Reed. Harvey, her husband.
Yeah. Harvey's phenomenal. So, both of those guys. I love them both.
So they're going to be playing with me tonight.
Well, great. Well, tell him I said hi, for sure. I'm actually going to be in Portland. Maybe I can try to stop by after. I have a meeting up over at the Holiday Inn, but we'll see if we can.
Well, we're close to the Holiday Inn.
Yeah, you're not that far at all.
Well,
that's great. So that would be great to have Joyce joining you. She is,
she does
blows
it when
my
I'm
mind.
In the neighborhood.
Harvey
she plays. I mean, I think she's some kind of genius or
she
something.
She is some.
She's
some
amazing.
Kind of, she's a lot of things, and genius is one of them for sure.
But I love her playing. She's a wonderful soul.
I was just talking
we're
about
related
her
somehow. I think
I was just talking about her the other day, and someone was saying that she's doing this new electric thing. You know, she's really
getting
into
she wrote
this.
Me about that. I'm really looking forward to hearing it. But she's a force of nature, as is Harvey.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's going to be great to see them, and I will also say that. I'm very happy to be here, and then the people who are tuning in, I am not Dar Williams, but she says hello. I'm going to step up for her and just say hello.
Thank you. Can you do the babysitter song? No. Time Right House 217. We're live in the studio with Eric Anderson. And is no, he is not Dar Williams by any stretch of the imagination.
She's beautiful.
I love Dar, too. Well, you do have a guitar in hand, your tool of choice. Let's see if...
Here's a real old song I wrote, I do for you. It's called Violets of Dawn. I wrote it in New York in the Village a long time ago. At the beginning of the singer-songwriter movement. Mm. Take me to the night, I'm tipping topsy-turvy, turning upside down. Hold me tight and whisper what you wish for, there is no one here around. You can sing song me sweet smiles regardless of the city's careless frown. Come watch the no colors fade blazing in the petal sprays of violets of dawn. In blindfold wonderment's enchantments, you can lift my wings softly to fly. Your eyes are like swift fingers reaching out into the pockets of my night. Whirling, twirling, puppy warm before the flashing cloaks of darkness gone. Come watch the no colors fade blazing in the petal sprays of violets of dawn. Some prince charming I could be on two white steeds to bring you dappled diamond crowns. Yeah. And climb your tower, sleeping beauty, for you ever know I left the ground. Or you could wear a Cinderella snow white Alice Wonder landed gown. Come watch the no colors fade blazing in the petal sprays of violets of dawn. But if I seem to wander off in dreamlike looks, please let me settle slowly. It's only me just staring out at you, a seeming stranger speaking holy. No, no, I don't mean to wake you up, it's only loneliness just coming on. So let the no colors fade blazing into petal sprays of violets of dawn. Like shadows bursting into mist behind the echoes of this nonsense song. It's just a chasing, whispering trail of secret steps. See them laughing on. Oh, there's magic in the sleepiness of awakening to a child's sounding yawn. Come watch the no colors fade blazing in the petal sprays of violets of dawn. Oh, there's magic in the sleepiness of awakening to a childish sounding yawn. Come watch the no colors fade blazing in the petal sprays of violets of dawn. Thank you very,
very
much.
Nice. Eric Anderson live in the WSCA studios. Classic, Violets of Dawn, 1964. That has stood at the test of time for sure. What a beautiful song.
Thank you so much. I still love
that song.
Thank you.
you had mentioned before that song that it was, sort of at the dawn, for lack of a better word, of the singer-songwriter movement. So you were there to sort of see the birth of it, maybe even help create it.
Man, when I was younger, I'll tell you one thing, we saw a lot of dawns. So nobody went to bed that early. Yeah, well, I guess it was sort of the dawn of the singer-songwriter movement. There were a couple of handfuls of writers besides myself, of course, Phil Oakes, Tom Paxton, Bob Dylan, Peter Lafarge, Buffy St. Marie, Patrick Sky, Dave Von Ronk was sort of the godfather of the scene. Also, the great Fred Neil, who was my favorite of all, and Tim Hardin. And it seemed back then, a few people were writing about a lot. And now it seems like, it just has grown exponentially. There's like songwriters everywhere you turn. If you go in the toilet and you open the toilet seat up, man, there'll be a songwriter down there holding a guitar. I mean, everywhere. But it seems like the more songwriters there are, the less they write about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but there's a lot of stuff going on. Sorry about that, everybody. A lot of stuff going on, and I guess it's hard to get songwriters to wrap their minds around it. They can't seem to get it. Things are happening so fast and coming at you so quickly with 24/7 news, and there's so much information without much meaning, yet nobody can quite put it together except the right wing.
It is hard to sort of digest.
Those guys can do it. The right wingers, they can put it together. They can come up and say, well, stop everything. This is how it is, and this is how it's going to be. But most people and writers who have more nimble minds, they're looking for more complex solutions, I guess, and they can't really write it or protest against the stuff that's going on. Though there's probably a lot more going on to write about than there was even when the civil rights and the Vietnam War were going on. So it's a strange phenomenon.
Well, I don't know. It seems not that it was so. I don't think transparent is the right word, but it seems so kind of. There was no ambiguity. Well, not that there was no ambiguity, but it was like, okay, I know what's wrong.
You knew where
here.
Things were, and here it's like the sands are shifting all the time. Yeah. The ground is shifting all the time. You don't.
And
know.
It's hard to tell what's real, and it's hard to tell what's honest, especially when you're here.
Well,
and I suppose that's always
nothing
been the
case. Is really real. That's the thing. The first thing you got to understand. I mean, truth, whatever that is, truth and real are separate because real is just. A consensus of opinion. I mean, it's manipulated.
Yeah,
reality is
close.
Just perception. It has nothing to do with what's really true.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever people paint reality, I mean, they say Obama is a Muslim, which he's not, but people, if they, you get enough people who think that's real, they'll think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So reality is manipulation of truth, as it were.
Right. I suppose it's the tip with whoever the majority believes that becomes reality.
That's right. It's all how the majority believes, and that becomes the reality. True, whether it's true or
whether
it's not.
History books were written
true.
By, Exactly.
So these are issues. I mean, even that alone is worth writing about, but you'd almost have to be Heidegger or some kind of philosopher or something. And it's very, but it is true. Perception replaces truth.
And you've always kind of approached your, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you've always approached your songwriting from that more of a metaphysical perception. You've come at it from sort of higher above, looking down.
Well, you don't think that when you're doing it, I'm telling you. You're lucky if you get three words you can put in a row when you're writing. It's not so mysterious or so
where does the muse come from for you? I mean,
who knows?
You don't know.
I mean, no. People who are artists, I mean, they don't. You never know where it comes from. You just feel it's like passing through your hands. It's just you're lucky enough to be there to hold it, to grab it and hold it and pass it on.
I was watching a thing on YouTube. It was your first appearance on the Johnny Cash Show.
Oh, yeah.
And Johnny was, obviously, he was a big fan. You could tell that he was really digging you. But what I was impressed was he said, this is a song, you know, we asked him to come, we asked Eric to come on, and he wrote this song last night, basically, to come on.
Yeah, well,
And I was so impressed by that, and it just, I was like, wow.
They had the lyrics pasted up on boards, like, in front of me, and the Carter family standing behind me with this sort of mock stained glass window set. The thing is, the song was called Born Again. When I wrote the thing, when I was writing it, I was not aware of the resurgence of this evangelical movement, of the born again movement. I had no, maybe I saw something on a billboard driving down in L.A. somewhere. I saw something in a newspaper, but I never connected it to a religious movement. So I wrote this song called Born Again. And of course, my born again thing was not like, it was a little more complex than.
Absolutely.
But they grabbed the title, and they went for that. They just liked it. So we put it together, and that's what you saw. And I was pretty amazed at what happened, you know. Because it was like a code word. Born again, it was like tacit, some kind of understanding everybody knew down there. And I just some Yankee walking in there singing a song called Born Again. And it wasn't like really right up to the moment that I realized, oh man, now I see the light, what's really happening around me here.
So that's another example of the perception and reality in a sense, you know, because people put into...
Well, it was a lack of perception in another way on my part, because I didn't realize there was this thing going on, this Born Again movement.
So did that...
They loved it.
Yeah. Well, it's a great song. I mean,
the song.
You know, so, and I thought the performance was great, and I think
it's the only time I ever did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just one show.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And when I saw it on YouTube, I was like, well, just the fact that was your first television appearance, is that correct? Was that the first time you ever been?
National appearance, TV appearance, yeah.
And you looked a little nervous, but I thought you pulled it off.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially because, I mean, all the lyrics were like, you know, 20 feet ahead of me in block letters. I mean, and there were so many words. But the band was great and, you know, carried the day, so it was good.
So what was it? Did you get a chance
he's great.
To?
John was beautiful.
Well, that's what I was going to ask next, yeah.
And his wife's trying to convert me and stuff.
Yeah, know? Well, then the born again thing comes to you. It's like, oh, I get it now.
She said, it's simpler than that, Eric. I mean, look into all these lyrics. She said, your brain is like scrambled eggs. I mean, it's in a mix master or a blender. So what's going on with you? Come on, calm down, settle down. I mean, the light is right there. You know, just walk into it. And I mean, of course, that was not my cup of tea at the time.
Right, yeah. I get it. it sounds like it was an experience that turned out to be bigger than maybe what it might have been.
Well, you know, it's weird. I never, after that show, it wasn't like there was a surge of concerts or gigs. I mean, everything just kind of, this was the weird part. Everything just kind of went on the way it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
it wasn't like I did like a 40 city tour or something. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen that way.
Interesting.
But I went on to make Blue River.
Right. And another classic album, which I've never heard, by the way, which I apologize for, but I've never heard it. But as I've read about that, it's the album that sort
you
of...
You never heard Blue River?
I've never heard it. Never. I mean, I've heard the song. I've never heard
the album.
Heard the album.
It's going to be 40 years old.
I know. And well, I'll tell you where, how...
Do you have a copy of Blue River?
This is how I came to your music, and I came late. Came late to your music, and how I got sort of introduced to you. You're shaking your head now, like, I can't believe this guy, but it's true. So sorry.
Well, that was kind of the album that put me on the map in a way.
Oh, absolutely. As I've gone back and sort of read about your career, it was that album that sort of.
Should have
catapulted you. It seems like.
Well, then I made another album, and then there's a regime change at Columbia, and my album got lost in the shuffle because it hadn't been completed, and it wasn't completed till later. So it finally came out like 20 years later. How many years later? 20 years later, they found it again and reissued it on Sony Legacy, which. Was the label that put out like Robert Johnson, Miles Davis, mm-hmm. and
Yeah, I definitely wanted to get into that and find out exactly how that happened, because it just seems like a weird stroke of
It was lost in purpose, I think, because people wanted to keep their jobs and they didn't want to be involved with a half-baked project or something that wasn't completed. And also, I was the, under the wing of Clive Davis, and he got dumped.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he left, I went later to his next label, Arista. But the people around me just sort of walked. And they took the album with them.
Well, let's
so they could keep their jobs.
Right. Let's come back and talk about that if you don't mind, because it does sound like a.
Well, that's the long and short of it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
It just seems like when I said a phenomenal stroke of either bad luck or something, because it's. This seems...
Oh, yeah. You could look at it two ways. I mean, you could look at it as bad luck, and you're still around to feel it. Or you could look at it and say, there's an artist like Janis Joplin on the label that she sold millions, and her follow-up album sold millions. But she's not here.
Right.
So it depends on how you look at it. You have to have almost a Buddhist outlook, because otherwise you'd go crazy.
Yeah, I suppose.
You can't be attached to good luck or bad luck.
Right.
I'm not a full-fledged Buddhist. I don't sit on a mountain or anything, but I'm reasonably awake.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing, and that's one, that's a little bit more than Genesis at this point. But you're still making great music, which we definitely
appreciate.
Thank
you very much. You want to hear another one?
Yeah, please. Let's go to another one. The time right now is about 25 before the hour. We're live in the studio with Eric Anderson.
This is also on the Clone album, but I'll do it live for you. Hold your partner in the spotlight. Feel his waves of tenderness as I curse you from the shadows in this dance of love and death. I don't want to argue, I don't want to fight. Sometimes it feels so beautiful to have you out of my sight. I can't say if it's love or hate. I can't say that I'm bored. Whatever it is, baby, I don't care. I don't want you anymore. Don't want you anymore. Confess it all into his arms. Get it off your chest. I'll be watching you from the wings in this dance of love and death. In your dance of love and death. Get yourself into the shadows. Your act will disappear. You're just another working girl in love, trying to mask all her fears. I never could recall a name, ever place a face. Your act is such a comedy. Hard work is such a waste. Hard work is such a waste. Give away all the mules and the cotton and the land that the master blessed. The flutter wash the big house clean in this dance of love and death. In your dance of love and death.
Dance of Love and Death. That is Eric Anderson live in the WSCA studios. And you can hear that song off his brand new album. You can hear a live cut of that, just like you just did, I suppose. Name of the new album is called The Cologne Concert. It is a live album. And fantastic. Thank you very much.
It'll be out in January.
January, the release
date. Or you have to come to the gig. And
or come tonight. Yep, you can get the limited edition copies that he has. You can also get it on vinyl, which, will you be selling these at your website? Can people go to your website?
No,
just through.
The weird thing is it's pretty cheap because it costs like $27 to bring it in, and it's being sold for $20
mm-hmm.
with the shipping. To buy an album in Europe is very expensive wholesale, but, you know,
okay.
That's the way we want to get we want to spread the word to the peoples.
So peoples get
all
on
the women's
there,
right?
So Meyer Records, they can go to Meyer Records if they want to.
Yeah, you can go to Meyer Records Deutschland, DE for Germany, DE stands for Deutschland.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be on Amazon everywhere when it comes out.
So go on. And any of the other, I mean, we talked briefly, well, it became brief about the fact that, I mean, you've got 25 albums, 25 solo albums, 25, 26 solo albums, and then you have the work that you've done with others, and then you just released this is
too
your
many,
second live
too
album.
Many records, too many. It's confusing.
But I do want to. The look you gave me when I said I had never, when I had never heard that was like one of rebuke. So
was
I just
I was rather surprised because it was at a time it was like a disc jockey favorite. People just.
To sort of explain myself and how I came to folk music, or how I came to sort of the acoustic singer songwriter mm-hmm. thing, is I was always a metalhead. You know, I was born in '65.
Oh yeah.
So I was when I came up through high school, I listened to heavy metal and all that stuff, and we talked about John Gorka earlier, and he was sort of the one that sort of got me into the folk music scene, into the acoustic music scene, and then I started digging back, and the first album I got of yours was Beat Avenue.
Wow, okay, well, you jumped on the train late. But,
absolutely, I just love that album. I fell in love with it.
Because it had a lot of guitar on it.
Yeah, I suppose that is. It was that kind of rocket, but The Street was always there. That was another great album. I mean, I've gotten the albums since then, for sure, and I've gone back and listened to some of your older stuff.
We'll try to get you, we'll burn you a copy of Blue River. They're very hard to get now. Once again, they reissued it and remastered it, and so... We'll see what we can do for
all right.
Sean.
That'll be good. I need to broaden my horizons just a little bit more.
But you know, you might find it interesting.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Car, check it out. It has very good sound.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, there you
we're
go.
Pretty happy with it.
Time right now is 2:41. We're live in the studio with Eric Anderson. He's performing tonight up in Portland at One Longfellow Square. And we mentioned, as I said earlier, with a person like you, it's so easy to go to so many different places, you know. We talked about sort of the birth of the singer-songwriter movement, how you were there, and you're a part in it, and you're witnessing of it. And, you know, everything you've experienced, you know, the loss of that sort of breakthrough album
right.
that might have been, and then sort of rediscovering that later, and then having to come out to critical acclaim, you know, 20 years
that's
later.
Yeah, other strange things happened, too. I mean, I was managed by Brian Epstein when he was the Beatles.
And
he died. He was coming over to do a record deal for me. So all kinds of strange things have happened to my career.
So talk about that a little bit. I mean, Brian is a famous manager of the Beatles.
I was playing Steve Paul's Scene in New York, which was an underground club that had Tiny Tim in one room, like consoling brokenhearted girls from Jersey who had breakups and stuff, and he would sing to them and talk to them. He was a wonderful soul. And his dark, cordoned off room with a curtain. that was just used for extra seats and cases, empty cases of beer and stuff. And there he was, and it was kind of a big room. And the main room was a stage where people played during the week, where I played with my, I had a band, and I played there where Brian Epstein heard me. Bobby Columbia had brought him down, who knew him. Bobby was the drummer in Blood, Sweat, and Tears later, but he happened to be my drummer at the time. And later became an executive at Columbia Records. He found that New Orleans artist, who was that, not Wynton Marsalis, but the white, oh, I forget his name. He's an actor, too.
Oh,
forgive me, folks, but it'll come.
I know, I could see his face.
But the place, Steve Paul's scene was kind of a great place in the Midtown in the 40s, and at night, around midnight, that's when people would jam, like Jimmy Page would come down when there was in town, Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix played there all the time at night, Johnny Winter, a lot of just, it was a guitar player's heaven, that's where they would come and play at around 12 o'clock at night, so it was really happening. It had a great little bamboo bar, and it was a really beautiful place, so Brian heard me, and then he brought me over to England a couple times, and then he was coming over, and before he came, went to sleep and never woke up.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how when you heard the news and how it landed?
I heard the news in a strange way, and I mean, and being in the folk music world, it was kind of pretty. I was pretty shocked. I was at the Philadelphia Folk Festival playing that year in the summer, and I was standing at a chain link fence on one side, and John Denver was on the other side. And John and I were talking, and I hadn't told anybody about Brian Epstein because, you know, the Beatles, everyone had a, it was like Bob Dylan going electric or something.
Right.
I just didn't want to mention anything about that. So when he died, I found out through the guy who ran the Philadelphia Folk Festival. He announced it on stage, but now we got a day to rejoice and be glad, you know. Brian Epstein died, you know, and the Beatles... what did he ever do for folk music? Was it like a really right-wing reactionary?
Is that what they said? Kenny, are you kidding
me? Yeah, and he actually stopped somebody in the middle of their set to announce it. And John Denver and I are looking at each other because, you know, John Denver had a foot in both worlds. He understood the stuff.
Right.
And
that just blows my mind for some
reason.
Yeah, it really is
shocking. Ken Goldstein is a folk anthropologist and, you know, folklorist, like in the tradition of, like, Alan Lomax. In fact, Alan Lomax, who was great, you know, he flipped out when Bob Dylan went electric on stage. He had a fight with Bob Dylan's manager, like rolling around the mud, you know. Well, it was this kind of thing. I mean, they really wanted, it was theirs, they owned it, they possessed it. No one's allowed to tamper with it, and it was a threat, a challenge to their, like a visceral threat, a palpable threat to their existence as folkies, you know. So I've always had a mixed feeling about the folky scene, and
I can imagine.
I never liked it, you know, because as an artist, artists are independent. They don't belong to. I mean, they don't in blood sign their lives away in allegiance to some fake, you know, concept.
I mean, that completely surprises me. You know, to hear that sort of revelations.
That's how I found out, and then I went back to New York, and I never wanted to play there again, but I did.
Yeah, I was just going to say, did you? Yeah,
a couple times.
Wow, that's just, I'm speechless after that. That just kind of blows my mind. Time right now is about 13 minutes before the hour, live in the studio.
I can do one more for you.
Yeah, that'd be great if you
could
do
that.
If you
like B. Evan, I'll do one off of that.
All right, thank you very much.
We're going to take a little survey tonight, Sean, and see how many people up in Maine or here actually make the trek up there to...
I know Joyce and Harvey will. So.
And if they don't, I'll understand it. It could be an age thing. They can't... They've lost their driver's license, so the wheelchairs don't work. I can feel myself sinking back to the earth. Each new idea seems to make it much worse. Maybe death is a mask for some kind of rebirth. It's dragging me slow through the mud. Driving through Holland in the middle of the night. The rain's blowing fiercely over the dikes. over the sea, I can just make out the lights, but I don't know how deep is your love. Well, I look over yonder, and what do I see? A big band of angels singing to me. They wave to get closer, but there ain't time, you see. My below has no use for above. I've been so many places, where do I begin? Soon as it's over, it starts up again. All I remember of you is the memory grows thin, are the tears and the dark and the salt on your skin. Well, I never played Hamlet, but I learned some good lines. How good is timeless when you're running out of time? Why does life with a reason get tricked by a rhyme? What's a trick of not turning back? I ask you how far does far go? Where this crossroad ends, baby, I'll never know. I never was one to get tricked off the road, but I sometimes lost sight of the track. I search in the border, why search anymore? It's shrouded in a mist, like a faraway shore. Well, I don't even know where we is anymore. And I wouldn't know fiction from fact. I've been so many places, where do I begin? Soon as it's finished, starts up again. All I remember of you is the memory grows thin, are the tears and the dark and the salt on your skin. Well, you made a sad smile when I touched your face, tracing lines with my fingers I couldn't replace. I pointed to blue skies bigger than space, but I knew that you only saw rain. Some get so tired and sick of romance. Some are unlucky cause they never had the chance. For some, love can be just the heat of the dance, sleepwalking you slow through the flames. The sky's sending messages into the air. I don't know many places, I'd know anywhere. When the dealer dealt danger, I was getting my share. Well, there's no point in talking about that. I've been so many places, where do I begin? Soon as it's finished, it starts up again. All I remember of you is the memory grows thin, are the tears and the dark and the salt on your skin. Salt on your skin. On your skin.
Beautiful. A song called Salt on Your Skin. Again, Eric Anderson live in the WSCA studios.
It's a little early, but...
Fantastic, though. That's one of those songs. I mean, all your songs, really. I mean, you just have such a density to your words and your writing and your poetry.
Thank you.
I always just wish I could write like that. You know, it's one of those things. Another thing I want to compliment you on is the resonance in your voice.
Well, you mentioned
Fred Neil earlier, and the way you approach some of his songs, or and all your songs, actually, there's just this resonance that just, I just love it.
Well,
I really
do. It comes from Howlin' Wolf and Lightning Hopkins, people like that, too.
Uh-huh.
A lot. Merle Haggard, all kinds of influences, you know. When I was younger, I'd listen to all those people, and probably more than Johnny Cash, who's renowned for having this sort of low baritone bass voice, but mainly it was the blues singers that got me into singing this way.
There's more
I heard
of
a lot of them when I was in the village, you know, playing six nights a week, because gigs were six nights then.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody played it, Miles to Lenny Hopkins to me to Phil Oakes to everybody. You played a gig. If you played a gig in Portsmouth, you'd come here for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you live here, know the movies, the restaurants, you know where the best fishing places were. You might meet a girl, you might even start a family. Who knows? A lot can happen in a week.
Well, a lot's happened in a lifetime, in your lifetime. And I tell you, I couldn't be happier that you're here today. So thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you. I got one last question.
Sure.
Who's better, Iron Maiden or Megadeth?
Iron Maiden.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Okay.
But it's just a different style.
Okay.
But Megadeth is just a little bit too much for me. But,
okay.
But I haven't
now
listened.
Now we know your limits.
Yeah, I have certain limits. That's right. And thank you for that question.
All right.
Allowed me to think a little bit.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to seeing you folks up there in Maine.
Absolutely. I want to encourage and I do have a pair of tickets to go see Eric tonight up in Portland if you want to go. I want someone to go up there just so he can. So when he asks, there's some applause. So give me a call in the studio, 603-430-9722.
I hope somebody
calls,
because if nobody takes the tickets, then we know nobody's listening.
or they can't afford
a telephone.
Well, maybe that's it, or we're not judging. So give us a call, 603-430-9722. Eric's performing tonight up at One Longfellow Square. That's One Longfellow Square. It's a great venue up there. I love that place. It's very intimate, and it's going to be great. And Joyce Anderson, Harvey Reid will be joining.
And we hope to see you too, Sean. You're going to be in the neighborhood.
I will be in
the
neighborhood,
Inn,
and I think
so
that
no
I will. I think it should be done around 8 o'clock, so I should be able to swing on over.
All right, we expect to see you.
All right, and if no one calls, I'm calling right now to win those tickets.
Time right now is about guest list, Sean. You're on the guest list.
Time right now is about 5 minutes before the hour, and I'm going to go to a song called "Johnny Halfbreed." That's one of my, I just love this song, and it's off the album The Street Was Always There, came out in 2004, and then we'll do another song off of Beat Avenue. How's that? So there you go. The name of the song is called Johnny Halfbreed.
This song's called Johnny Halfbreed by Peter LaFleur.